Welcome back. Or welcome to hour three, I guess. But still, welcome back. All right. What do we got here? Poles Lee's proposal would also cut 10 of 18 staff in two other district departments that would be combined into one. Restorative practices and positive behavioral interventions and supports. That doesn't really sound like anything that should be cut. Armendariz said the cuts are largely due to the end of federal pandemic relief aid. So what I'm starting to see is during the pandemic, which I think we overreacted to, especially when it came to educating young people, because by eliminating in-class instruction, and again, this was the teachers' union, the teachers didn't want to come back into the classroom. Young people got out of the habit of going to school every day. More young people got out of the habit of going to school every day, and it was diminished. I don't think they took it seriously. And then we saw upticks and all sorts of other wayward behavior because school is like kids need structure. They absolutely have to have it. If not, everything breaks down. They have to have it. And school is structure. Here is where they are for this many hours per day, per week, per school year. This is where they will be. When you take that away or you try to redefine it, there's going to be a whole bunch of unintended consequences. And it seems like with the additional pandemic money, and NPS got, what, $700 million worth of pandemic money? Because I get it, though. They had to, like, change and reform what the curriculum and how they were going to instruct children looked like. And I think some kids, if not all of them, got laptops because some kids didn't have laptops. So, okay, fine. But they went crazy hiring people and creating positions with temporary pandemic money. Like, that wasn't a good long-term solution, because when the pandemic aid ran out, what are you going to do with all of these positions that you created? Like, it just does not make any sense to me. Like, the budget process there, and maybe there's just something I'm not getting personally, like something Sherwin Hughes is not understanding about expanding the number of employees when you have less children in school. Quite honestly, the schools are closed. And a lot of these staff, it seems, are like in-school staff people, like in-person staff folks. Because how many more people do you need to hire in the district when the kids are going to school virtually for, what, 2 years? According to a district report on pandemic aid spending, the district had used the aid to pay for 4 staff in the gender and identity and inclusion department and 6 staff in the Black and Latino male achievement department. The aid, the pandemic aid, also paid for 5 restorative practices staff. Armendariz said the consolidation of departments would, quote, allow continuation of school support with little to no interruption of service next year, but didn't provide any further explanation. How do you do that by cutting staff? By cutting staff after you got $250 million referendum. And I know they're not getting all $252 million right away. But do you know that going into the referendum, they still had $377 million unspent? Like, y'all, that's a lot of money. Like, that's money for a whole city. That's like city budget money. And this is a school district of what? 70,000 kids? All right, hold on a second. My guest is here, but I don't know where he's at. When people say that they're here, it's kind of confusing because they could be anywhere. Is he in? Hold on, let me see. So I need an intern. Yeah, I do talk to text. Hold on. Are you in the studio? Question mark. And then we'll hit send. Posley's budget would cut about 44 educational assistant positions out of 1,387. Armendariz said many of those positions are vacant positions for paraprofessionals who provide academic and behavioral support, though she didn't say how many. She said some paraprofessionals have used a district program to become teachers. Under the plan, the district would also lose positions for 9 social workers, 3 psychologists, 13 school nurses, and 9 health assistants. Okay, call me crazy. Don't these sound like necessary services that can take care of and look after the whole well-being of the child? Because it's got to be more than just educating the kids on reading, writing, and arithmetic. You need a whole bunch of services, because some of the places and areas and zip codes and census tracts where these children come from are lacking necessary social support resources so they can get them in the schools. While it's a very heavy cost, if it assists the child in getting through high school and getting through middle school, whatever, with the least amount of disruption, then we're all for it, right? Because ultimately the goal is to get more children to graduate and be reading on grade level, et cetera, et cetera. And they're removing these positions. I just don't know how this is going to increase the overall performance of these children by removing necessary services. And so when we were told that the built-in inequity when it comes to children who are in the most need, this referendum is going to give money to fund the inequity, not eliminate it, not get rid of it, not remedy it, but fund the inequity. Uh-oh, Dion. Dion, the non-voter, they got one for you. Your ass getting cut too. Staff and food services could also be cut. About 8 managers and 27 assistants. Positions are counted in the budget as full-time equivalents, meaning one position could actually be multiple part-time staff that get laid off. Amandara said 15 of the cut positions in food service represent staff who had been counted twice in this year's budget because they were assistants training to become managers. She said another 7.5 of the cut positions had been tasked with preparing pre-packed lunches. Dion has actually sent us pictures of him working in the lunchroom. Dion, I hope you looking for a new job, buddy. The district has been transitioning from pre-packaged meals to school-based production kitchens. Well, we were warned about this. So if I fast forward 3 years, what year is this here? This is 2024. So 2027. I'd imagine we're probably going to have some election, a low turnout school board election, or maybe a special election. Who knows? But sometime between 2027 and 2028, there's going to be another referendum request. I wonder how you guys are going to vote on this one. And maybe I'm wrong, right? I want to be wrong. I so desperately want to be wrong. When I'm very like pessimistic on the functioning of our government, according to the Pew Research Center, when they asked Americans if they think the government is functioning on their behalf, 80% of y'all said no. And so this is an example of that. It just doesn't make any intuitive sense to me as a voter and a taxpayer and a resident of the city of Milwaukee who want the young people to go to MPS to be the future of the workforce, because that just makes sense. Right now, we got to import people from all over the place because the education that is being attained in the city of Milwaukee is not adequate to fill the positions that are necessary to be filled to keep this city moving. And maybe they got a trick up their sleeve to where these cuts in these necessary support services, and especially in programs that are designed to eliminate and reduce suspensions and increase school attendance of Black and Latino boys, by cutting that, they're actually going to improve, huh? And maybe. It's just disappointing because all we're going to continue to do is blame each other. I don't know if we're going to see the outcomes. Maybe we do see positive outcomes, because let me tell you why that would be so incredibly beneficial, because then we could reinstill people's trust in government. Maybe this plan they're putting together where they're cutting, eliminating, taking people that are like support staff for teachers, eliminating their positions, and then offering those people that are out of the classroom an ability to go back in the classroom. I don't think that's going to happen, though, because usually when people leave the classroom, they don't want to go back in it. Oh, I've heard horror stories from some of these teachers. They can't wait to get out of the classroom. They want to be an administrator. They want to come to work at 11 o'clock, stay till 2. They want to have a secretary. They want to have a whole staff. They want to be able to work from home. And they make a lot more money. And now they're offering some of those administrators positions back in the classroom. Most of them probably won't go. Let's talk to Miss Nikki. You're on 101.7 The Truth.
Hi, Sherwin, and thank you so much for taking my call. I have a quick question as you was reading through the budget. So if MPS is proposing to cut vacant positions, those are positions, if I'm not mistaken, that was needed. And they are vacant not because they were not needed, it's because they were not able to find folks to fill those positions. So if they cut those positions, aren't we placing those schools that are in need of additional teachers and social workers and nurses, are we putting them in a position to where they'll never have those services?
Nikki, I wish I had an answer for you.
Oh, so I'm just sitting here and I'm like, wait a minute, because we had a shortage, right?
Still do.
So the shortage never went away.
It's even bigger. We're short like at least 300 teachers right now, minimum.
Yeah. Like I probably mentioned this to you before, Sherwin, my daughter is a kindergarten teacher. And according to the town hall meeting that I went to by the past best school board director, Aisha Carr stated that the ratios are supposed to be a 1-15. My daughter has a 1-30 with a part-time para. So I'm wondering, how does this budget help those kids? And she works in a predominantly African-American school.
Your guess is as good as mine. Here's what I heard something, Nikki. I'm going to share this with you. I don't know if it's true or not, but this is what I heard. So they are cutting hundreds of positions in this budget. And this is what I heard now. They're cutting these positions. Some of them seem to be very vital to the well-being and social well-being and health of our children. But they're cutting the positions to free up money in the budget to give raises and bonuses to the teachers that helped the referendum pass. That's what I heard. Now, remember when they got the $87 million referendum in 2020, in April of 2020, the MPS came to us on their hands and knees, and they were begging. Oh, we need money for the babies. We said, we got you. And we passed that referendum. First thing they did is they gave teachers and administrators a raise. First thing they did. And so now when they are asking for more money and they got it, and now we are seeing the details of this budget. Oh, there's a school board meeting tonight, by the way. It's on 52nd and Valley. And so now we come to find out they're cutting all these positions. And I heard that they're cutting these positions, like $60 million they're going to distribute to the teachers as a reward for their campaign work on a referendum. That's crazy to me.
That's wild. Sherwin, that's wild, and it's scary. This is crazy. So I will be at the meeting tonight, so thank you so much for sharing the budget, and I'll hang up and continue to listen.
All right. Thank you for your call. All right. Got our guest here. Like, this guy is real smart. Quentin Claibon. He's a senior research director for the Institute for Reform in Government, and we're going to talk about education. He specializes in elementary, I think, in high school education. He's got a lot of stuff to say. And I wanted to bring him on the show so he can tell you a lot of stuff. And he went to a fancy school, so he knows a lot of big words. He's a very smart person. So, all right, take a break, come back. I'm going to talk to Quentin Claibon on the other side, a senior research director with the Institute for Reform in Government. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. It's The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Welcome back to the program. In studio, Quentin Claibon. He is with the Institute for Reforming Government. And I heard you speak at a previous school board meeting, and the way you detailed common sense remedies and solutions to so many abject failures of the district was very profound, very articulate. And then you follow me on Twitter, which of course I appreciate, and decided to have you on the show on your request, by the way, which I'm glad I accepted your request. So we got a school board meeting tonight. Can you give folks some details from your experience and your point of view of what can be done to get better outcomes with the current system we have and the resources in the current system?
Right. First of all, thanks for having me. There are like shows that pretend to talk about real things, and then there are people who actually get into it, and you're definitely the latter, so I appreciate your time. Yeah, so I worked at St. Marcus Lutheran School for 7 years, still mentor, volunteer for the alumni high school and college age kids. Urban education is really critical to any kind of future for Wisconsin. I think what people I just want to help like feed some data to people to help articulate, to add to what they're articulating already on your show and in these school board meetings. So I think we know that things are bad, but not how bad. So let's just take Black students in Wisconsin. This is genuinely true. There are three states that have fixed reading enough: Florida, Massachusetts, and Mississippi, where the special needs kids in those states outscore the black kids in Wisconsin. Not like kids in schools with a lot of special needs kids, literally just the special needs kids are outscoring our black kids. If you moved your family to Mississippi right now, they'd be like, oh my gosh, do you have a learning disability? Do we need to get you in this, like, a small classroom? That's how bad things have gotten in Wisconsin and specifically Milwaukee. If you're thinking about, like, think what, like, your viewers, your listeners' image of like Baltimore public schools is. Those kids are a year ahead of ours. Chicago, 2 years ahead of ours. Miami, 3 years ahead of ours. So this is, we may have struggles here, but, you know, Baltimore has struggles, Chicago has struggles, and yet they've figured out something we haven't. And that's what I wanted to talk about today.
How do, maybe they get more funding, right? Because it's always about the money. Maybe those schools that have found a way to increase the reading scores, et cetera, that's because they get more money per student than here. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's what you would think, right? And so obviously, if you get into like Boston, if you get into Chicago, they are spending a little bit more. But like my brother lives in Texas, and I know lots of St. Marcus kids have relatives in Mississippi. You know, those teachers are working two or three jobs. Those, you know, their history books end in the 1980s. You know, they're making things work there. Right now, Milwaukee is in the top of like the 100 biggest districts in the country. Let's just take the top 100 biggest districts. We're 15th for spending. Before the referendum. So even before the referendum, we were doing really, really well in terms of spending. And yet those results aren't coming out in the classroom. And the question is why? And hopefully people show up at 5:30 tonight at Milwaukee Public School Central Services to ask why.
Do you have an answer as to why that
is?
Of
course.
Well, we are 15th out of 100 major school districts and we have lackluster performance?
Yeah. So if you're like 29 years old or younger, apologies, your school probably failed you when it came to teaching reading. So we switched things up in like the year 2000. Long story short, you and I got the gray hairs poking through. We learned to read through like phonics, so sounding out words, hooked on phonics, all that stuff, right? So if I don't know what the word truth is, I can pronounce T-R-U-T-H, and I can sound out what the word truth means, right? Right now, for Milwaukee Public Schools and schools across the state, not just MPS, we were taught basically to memorize words. So you memorize the word truth and you memorize the word insurance, which works for a little while. But once you're trying to memorize those fancy school words that you were talking about before, you just can't memorize all of the words. So very long story short, Mississippi in 2013, they said, we're freaking Mississippi. We have to fix it. Well, there's nowhere. We're at bottom. We just need to switch things up and see what we can do. They went back to phonics. They retrained all their teachers in phonics. They changed how the colleges teach their teachers. And then they gave parents support to reinforce that at home. In 6 years, they went from the bottom to top five. And then in another couple of years, they're now top three. They fixed it in a decade.
Help explain this to me, because if we know that that kind of change and amendments and changing the pedagogy works, then why are we so resistant to doing something like that here?
Well, as you know, speaking as a former and current middle-class white person, if it doesn't affect the middle-class white people in Wisconsin, things don't change. And unfortunately, it did. Our white students are very mediocre nationally. Like, we get our butts kicked by Massachusetts. We get our butts kicked by a bunch of other states. But there was no movement on that. And then finally, last year, we passed a law to try and change things. So what I want people to do, if they're listening and not driving, look up The Science of Reading. The Science of Reading. That's the kind of thing that we're now going to do in Wisconsin starting September. It's late, but it's not too late. But what I would encourage people to do, whether in charter schools, voucher schools, or MPS, go to your teacher and say, hey, what's the science of reading? Is my child learning that? And if they give you either a 5-second answer or a 5-minute answer, they probably don't know what they're talking about, and you should switch your kid's school as soon as possible. If they give you a nice, concise answer, phonics, you know, helping kids break down words, then they really know what they're talking about, and you can trust them. So look up the science of reading.
Interesting that you said if it does not impact middle-class white folks, then there's probably not going to be any movement. But at the same time, white children are not performing as well academically as some of these other states as well. So what is Wisconsin getting so fundamentally wrong about how we educate our young people, especially if we know what blueprints exist in other places, that it's helping aid in their students' achievement, and we're just not doing it here, even though we're asking the public for more money, property taxes are going up, referenda are passing left and right. You would think that the investments would be in the things that have proven successful in other places.
Well said. So two things. One, nostalgia. Wisconsin in the 1990s, our schools were incredible. Like, we were smoking people, top five. And so people who grew up then, they just think things are the same way forever. They don't think that other states can improve. You know, we are in control of our destiny. Meanwhile, we were flat for 20 years and other states passed us by. So it's that complacency of being a front runner, and now we're behind. Secondly, I think it's the idea of that of people kind of being set in their ways. So if you were taught something in college, you have pride about how you were taught in college. You're proud that you went to UWSP or UW-Milwaukee or UW-Madison, and you're really proud of what you learned. And if someone comes in, if I come in and tell you you might need to switch things up, you're not going to take to that. And so sadly, we see generation after generation get wasted away, and all of a sudden we're at the bottom when it comes to Black performance nationally. And I think maybe a last thing that we maybe want to talk about is just not having enough teachers. So in MPS, 25% of the kids are Black boys, right? Blacks, unfortunately, we have the highest incarceration rate in the country for Black young men. And it's really unfortunate. 5% of the teachers in MPS are Black men. And most of those are middle school. Most of those are high school. Most of those are electives. You're not getting a Black male teacher in second grade, right? It just doesn't happen. And so there's this program, speaking to middle-class white people, there's this program that Governor Evers just put out called Teacher Apprenticeships. Basically, you're going to get free college, fully paid for, and you're going to get hands-on experience for your junior and senior year. You're basically going to be a junior teacher for your junior and senior year and get paid for it while you're going to college. Imagine that. So the problem is, it's offered in Appleton, it's offered in Green Bay, it's offered in Wausau. Guess where it's not offered? Milwaukee. MATC is not offering this program, and they didn't really care. So a second thing people can do today, call up MATC, call up the mayor, call up the governor, email, whatever you want, be nice, but say, hey, I want you to offer teacher apprenticeships. Do whatever you have to do to offer this free degree so that we can get teachers in MPS.
That sounds intentional. Why would it not be offered where the greatest need is? And on previous programs, I've talked about how the impact of having a Black male teacher at some point during a child's academic career dramatically increases their likelihood of graduation. They don't have to have Black male teachers their entire school career, but just having one at some point dramatically increases their likelihood of graduation. And you have this fantastic teacher apprenticeship program, and it's not being offered where we know that the impact could be most profound.
Yeah, imagine you're a 10-year-old boy, Black boy. You were taught to read incorrectly, and you haven't seen a Black male teacher your entire school career. Why would you ever care about school? Why would you ever think that you could be successful if you're not seeing it directly around you, right? Speaking of intentionality, yeah, I don't think these programs pass if they didn't affect, if they said, hey, we're going to take care of Milwaukee but not take care of Green Bay. I don't think these programs get through. But whenever Milwaukee gets excluded, for some reason, it's okay, right? And I've emailed MATC. We've had MPS. We work together with all schools. We've had private schools email MATC. They haven't responded. So I don't know if they don't think it's important or if they're working on it and don't want to say anything. But yeah, call up MATC today and say, hey, offer the FOTE degree, offer teacher apprenticeships. And your child, if they're a junior or senior, they could be getting a free bachelor's degree and starting in teaching in like 3 or 4 years. So I hope you do.
Speaking with Quentin Claibon, he's a senior research director for the Institute for Reform in Government. I have family members that are all over the country, and some of them have school-aged children, and a lot of those family members are in the South. And so when parents have open enrollment, which is done differently in different jurisdictions and in different states, the information of the schools that are available, some are private, some are charter, some are public. A lot of times, parents don't even know, but they can read these descriptions of the school, what the curriculum is like, what the core academic focus is, et cetera, et cetera. Some of it is, sports teams are, a draw for some of these students. The resistance that we have to offering alternatives to traditional public schools, especially if it's a charter school where the teachers don't have to be a member of the U word, the union, like they politically rail against it. They turn the public against these other forms of education. But we can look in other parts of the country where there are diverse offerings of how young people and how children get educated. Sometimes those children do well. I know it's political and I know all the history behind it, but what would you say about MPS's consistent resistance to voucher schools, which actually is a slur, but also even charter schools? Like, they were threatening to kick Carmen out of Pulaski, and Carmen is actually a higher performing charter school. Your thoughts on that?
You said it. Yeah, I think the fundamental problem with the Milwaukee Public Schools Board, and honestly, school, even some of the choice schools around the city, are they want to focus on doing the hard stuff instead of getting the simple stuff, the basics, right. So like the reason Jason Tatum is never going to be a better player than Giannis Antetokounmpo is because he's doing, you know, double hezzy shots, you know, praying they go in the playoffs. Giannis is just going to the rim and just flipping the ball in. That is why he will always be more effective. And so, and instead of focusing on getting reading right, recruiting teachers with this free program, you know, getting classroom management and like just kind of security just like in place so that kids feel safe to come to school and don't skip out. Instead of doing that, they're like, well, you know, we need all parents to be really good parents, because if you don't have good parents at home, you can't learn. Or like, we need a million mental health professionals. I'm not saying any of that stuff is bad. That would be great. We should have it. You've talked about 5 through 206 getting people cut the trauma care cut, but we're not getting the basics, the very important basic simple stuff right. And Mississippi, Florida, all these states prove that you can do it. And so they cast blame on others instead of getting the simple stuff right. And frankly, I would love to see the competition. I would love to see MPS rising up the national rankings. But until they fix the little stuff, it's never going to happen.
What role do you think that private schools, especially those that have limited enrollment for parental choice students, and schools that have really, really high tuition? Like, I see high tuition in private schools because I know a lot of public educators, they send their kids to Thomas More. They send their kids to Pius. Even some of our Democratic elected officials are very proud of the private school education that they got. Mandela Barnes is one. Chris Larson is another. But when it comes to allowing legislation that expands the number of children that can go to those same schools that our elected leaders went to, they are completely against it. So I've always looked at tuition as a barrier between poor black families and well-to-do middle-class black families. And also, because I always take a clue, or a cue rather, from where educators send their kids, because they know this stuff intuitively. And if they send their kids to private schools, but at the same time with union backing, they resist the expansion of more lower-income families sending their kids to private schools, isn't that still a bastion of segregation?
Yeah, and it has this cycle. So you may recall, I think you talked about it on your show, the people who voted for the referendum, basically they live on the borders of the Milwaukee district. So it was mostly white, or a large majority were white people, and they lived on the edge. They basically live in quasi-Wauwatosa or right on the lake, right? And there are the Montessori schools there and the language immersion schools there, the Milwaukee public schools that are like lower income, or that have fewer low income kids than my central Wisconsin school that I went to, even though we're in Milwaukee. They're, you know, majority white, which is insane. You talk about the schools in the suburbs that people send their kids to. When you have the income level limits as low as they are, and you have poverty in Milwaukee like it is, you're creating segregation. You're not allowing middle class families, whether they're black, white, Hispanic, Asian, indigenous, whatever, to come to these schools. You're saying this is a school for poor kids and this is a school for middle class or upper class kids. And the cycle continues. And of course, where do the teachers want to go? They want to go to the more stable schools with less turnover and less stress. And so they're getting much higher education than the kids in the low-income schools. And then we wake up 10 years later and we're like, wow, my kid didn't learn anything for their entire school career, and wonder why. So yeah, again, like, we perpetuate these cycles. Other states have done different things and we just choose not to do so.
I've also found that people that live in some of the neighborhoods that you suggested, where the schools that they send their children to are good and they believe they are worth investing in, a lot of folks look at their property taxes when it's used to fund schools as almost like paying tuition. So a very good friend of mine moved his family out to Whitefish Bay. Property taxes are literally insane. Now, the house is of tremendous value as well. But he said, we had to weigh paying tuition at a private school or paying higher property taxes in Whitefish Bay, which gives our kids a very, very high quality education. And they were willing to make that sacrifice. I think that similar phenomenon is happening in Milwaukee. Like, oh, sure, I'll pay more higher property taxes because that's like me paying tuition to send my kid to a high performing private school. So it's very, very unequal, to say the least.
Yeah. And then if folks want to use vouchers or use a free charter school to do so, for some reason they're prohibited. You know, people want to prohibit them from doing that. I think a really unfortunate thing is that you see it even with just open enrollment. So kids can go to Brown Deer. I don't know if people know this. Not this year. It switched back. But in 2023, Brown Deer public schools were less white than Milwaukee public schools. That's how many people are moving to the suburbs and exurbs and all that stuff. Again, just making those same choices. And I think a problem for getting Milwaukee to 1 million people, or to making place, like when I work, still mentoring at St. Marcus, kids tell me that, like, I think people think that, like, the white people in Milwaukee are like, stop make it running down Milwaukee. Stop saying bad things about Milwaukee. People in Wisconsin or people outside of Wisconsin. The people I know who talk the most trash about Milwaukee are the North Side Milwaukeeans. They're like, yeah, I'm leaving. I'm going to Atlanta. I'm going to Houston, and I'm not coming back. Thank you. Because we've offered nothing for them. You made a joke yesterday about, like, telling people to go into the trades, like, hey, hammer some roofs and everything will be fine. There are no basic jobs anymore, not in 2024 in America. You need to be able to measure. You need to be able to read correctly to do all of these things. Like, there are, if you want to be in the middle class, there are no jobs that just require basic skills anymore. And so until we invest here at home, until we stop forcing people or stop encouraging people to take higher taxes for their school choice or to even just use school choice in the city, we need to fix the basic stuff at home. That means reading. That means teachers. That means getting classrooms and hallways under control. That means making sure we don't have the worst attendance in the state, that kids actually go to class, especially in high school. We can spend as much as we want. There's a budget meeting tonight where people will talk about all the wonderful investments that are happening for your child if you go to a certain range of schools is what they really mean. And so, until we fix that, nothing's going to change.
Quentin Claibon, Senior Research Director at the Institute for Reform and Government. What time is the school board meeting tonight?
So there's one at 5:30 that I hope people come to, which is talking about Director Ayesha Carr, and it's talking about school closures, consolidations, mostly on the north side, probably. The budget meeting that you can speak at, testify at, say whatever you want for 2 minutes, that's probably around 6 o'clock.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being here. This is very enlightening and very informational.
Look at the crowd.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day, and I'll probably see you tonight.
Yeah, best audience in the city. Keep it going.
Oh, best audience in the city. Famous last words. The truth with Sherwin Hughes. Will be right back.
Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Welcome back to the program. Carrie, are you talking? All right. Congratulations on what was the actual official award that you won? Is it over here? Is it
in? No, it's at my house. It was Best Online Personality.
Well deserved.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey!
But I feel bad though, Carrie. Let me tell you why I feel bad, because I think how long did we work together? Like 2 years?
Yeah.
We put together some dynamic, memorable content.
Oh, yeah. The
and
talent
didn't
show?
Win nothing.
We should have submitted the talent show.
We sure did do a talent show. We should do another truth talent show. It was a whole mess, but it showcased the. I think that's where we found JD the poet, if I'm not mistaken. Well, I knew him prior to.
Mm-hmm.
But we should showcase the talents of our wonderful listeners. But I'm very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
In a very short period of time, you have proven yourself to be a dynamic person in this industry, and you got to keep going now.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, but then, because you, like, y'all young people, y'all don't stay in one place long enough to become an expert in something. Y'all get an award, you get an accolade, you go on and move to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Get your craft so perfected, Carrie, by staying in one place and perfecting your craft in such a way that you'll be able to write your ticket. Have some stability. Now, you ain't got to listen to me because.
But wait, can't you just learn your craft and perfect the craft in multiple places? If you're doing the same thing. So let's say I do talk radio here, right? Let's say 2 years from now, I go to another talk radio station. Are I doing the same things?
The transitions make mastering your craft more difficult. So if you go somewhere else, the people are different, the culture is different, the support is different, and it takes time and bandwidth to get used to those changes, as opposed to here at 1017 Truth. We know how it works around here, so I'm allowed to really focus on mastering my craft instead of worrying about management doing this and coworkers doing that. So if I was to change radio stations, yes, I could improve my craft. But mastering it would be difficult when I got to deal with new surroundings.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Well, real quick before I go, I'm so excited for your event.
Oh. The Beyond the Mic with Sherwin Hughes?
Yeah.
I'm afraid. No, don't clap it
up. Yeah.
If you hear what
clap
people,
it up.
You hear the callers, what they say, and those people are going to be drunk.
You're going to be drunk.
It's my event. I can do whatever I want to. And it's the start to the Memorial Day weekend, May 24th. Carrie, a lot of people are going to want to see you.
I'm going to come.
A lot of people are interested in meeting Savannah. Benjamin, I hope he comes.
Yeah, it's going
to
be lit.
Everybody's welcome to come.
Yeah, so make sure y'all come on out there. All the juicy jammers out there who be tapped in to Jamming with Juice Thursdays on YouTube, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. I want y'all to pop out to my boy Sherwin event. Okay, we at Gibraltar. It's going to be lit. It's up. It's stuck. Have a good time.
That was a shameless plug for your show with Ben. But now that's fine.
Not so shameless.
All right, fair enough. Bye, Carrie. See you later. All right, so why don't I do this? Al, I see you right there. Al, I'm going to give you a, I'm going to take a break, come back, and we'll do a new segment with Al. I'm sure he has a lot to say. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth. I'll be right back.
More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
We have a perfect way for you to kick off your Memorial Day weekend. I'm so excited to announce our Beyond the Mic with me, Sherwin Hughes, as a happy hour mixer. It's going to be a sophisticated... It's not. You guys are not sophisticated. A sophisticated event that takes place on Friday, May 24th from 5 until 7 p.m. at Gibraltar MKE. Indulge in... Don't overindulge now. Indulge in delicious cocktails, great conversation, and unforgettable memories with all of Truth Nation. Don't miss out on all the fun and join us for the Beyond the Mic with Sherwin Hughes, kicking off your Memorial Day weekend, Friday, May 24th from 5 until 7 at Gibraltar. Gibraltar is located at 131 North Jackson Street in the 3rd Ward, right across the street from the Italian Community Center. And it's black owned. Make sure you join us. We're mixing it up with you all summer long. All right. That's enough. Are there more of these? I probably should. All right. Let's see. Oh, let's talk to Al. Hello, Al. How are you?
I'm doing good. Happy Tuesday, by the way, and to the listeners. I was thinking about something. And when you brought up earlier when black people don't vote, I'm starting to think when black people don't vote, they have a fetish for race play. And they probably like being told what to do by whites, because your voting is your only power that you have. And we know a lot of black people aren't going to raise no $100,000 worth of hell. So when I hear, you know, that black people say they don't vote, I'm thinking it's a fetish for race play. Because some people like being told what to do by whites when that's really all they respect. You know, so I had to really look into that. And then I look at how our streets, our potholes is fixed with charcoal, voodoo salt, and pepper. Our mayor gave himself a tax increase. And then we got MPS, who got the money, then turned around and damn near fired everybody. That's a straight sugar honey iced tea nigga move. And on top of that, they did it all in your face. What I'm talking about, ratchetness. How low can you go? You know what I mean? So when I think about everything that's going on, these people are showing who they really are. So I think it would be great that the listeners start showing these people who they are, you know, so they can understand. Like, I think with the pothole, I mean, I think a bag of, mortar, concrete costs like $4.92. Because once they put that voodoo salt and that charcoal in there, give about 3 hours, all that stuff going to come right back out, and it's going to be all over your car. So, you know, since they ain't going to do it right, maybe the citizens should just start fixing the potholes themselves. And then when we look at MPS, you're going to ask for money. Then you ain't going to do right by the money.
Then go fire these people, and then everybody sitting here like somebody been eating devil eggs and organic food. Some just smell stanky, stanky, swanky, twanky, you know. I think it's time we need to try to. Yeah, stanky, stanky, cranky, cranky. It's like, you know, like when the people take their clothes off, but they always want to fold up their undergarments because they ain't doing something right when it comes to wiping and diaping.
Oh, boy.
So I think we as people need to show these people that we vote for and these people who keep asking for our money, we should show them who they effing with. And the only way we can do it is by raising hell. Maybe start fixing some of the potholes in your neighborhood. Now, on the street, don't get hurt. But if they're not going to fix it right, maybe we have to start fixing it ourselves. You know, a little, we'll fix it since you can't fix it right. But I just wanted to share that because the actions of what I'm seeing here is very ratchet, like Milwaukee's best ratchet, Milwaukee's beast ratchet, laser special exports ratchet. Parmesan is going to be a misdemeanor fight ratchet. So we need to, like, show these people we don't tolerate it. So I wanted to share that good information with you. I want all y'all to have yourself a wonderful day.
Al, you should go to the school board meeting tonight, 5:30, 52nd and Valique. You really should go.
You never know. You might see me there. All right. You have a good one.
All right, Al. Al ain't going. Al actually does go to a bunch of community events, and you would never know it's him. I'd imagine all of you have an image of what Al looks like in your head. He looks nothing like that. So if you could be standing right next to Al and wouldn't even know it until you hear him speak. Don't be in line somewhere at McDonald's ordering a sandwich. And Al could be right next to you. He orders his food, and then he gets his food and mess up his order. I told you I wanted a fillet of fish. You gave me some tam tam bam bams and lamb lambs. I hope it comes to the school board meeting. The United States is poised to ease restrictions on marijuana in historic shift, but it'll still remain a controlled substance from Washington, D.C. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration will move to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, opening up the opportunity for more medical research. The Associated Press has learned a historic shift to generations of American drug policy that could have wide ripple effects across America. The proposal, which still must be reviewed by the White House Office of Management and Budget, would recognize the medical uses of cannabis and acknowledge it has less potential for abuse than some of the nation's most dangerous drugs. However, it would not legalize marijuana outright for recreational use. The agency's move, confirmed to the Associated Press yesterday. Five people familiar with the matter who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the sensitive regulatory reviews clears the last significant regulatory hurdle before the agency's biggest policy change in more than 50 years takes effect. Remember, Joe Biden was a war on drugs man. Lock them up, throw away the key, you know, using the war on drugs to exacerbate incarceration. So, and he is likely to approve these changes. That is a major shift in his perspective because he was like war on drugs up through the 2000s, even during the Obama presidency. Now, Barack Obama, being the president, was less strict and less structured on the legalization of marijuana. So I looked at that one of two ways. During the Obama presidency between 2008 and 2016, like 75 or 80% of states either legalized marijuana medicinally or recreationally through referenda or through state legislation. The vast majority of it happened during the Obama presidency. And I looked at that one of two ways. Either Obama made it clear it was not going to be a priority for his administration to go after and pursue states and sue states in federal court if they defied federal law in legalizing marijuana, because it's still on the schedule. Schedule one, the worst of the worst kinds of drugs are on schedule one. Like marijuana is up there with like heroin and LSD and cocaine. So even though we know it's not as dangerous, not as addictive, not as deadly as any of those substances, all weed will do is make you want to like paint, eat some Funyuns, and maybe watch a Richard Pryor stand-up comedy. Like, that's all. That's the worst that can happen. But it's still scheduled with some of the worst, most addictive drugs, right? So either the Obama administration, like, yeah, you guys go ahead and legalize it. We're going to turn a blind eye. We're going to look the other way. Or states had so little respect for the federal government under a black president, they decided to defy the federal government anyway. Now, the problem is, as more and more states legalize for recreational use and medicinal use, the amount of money it would have cost the federal government and the executive branch to fight those states was exorbitant. But they either legalized marijuana in those states during the Obama years because Obama made it clear it was not a priority for him. Because remember when Obama took office, weed was not what the country was concerned about. We were concerned about home foreclosure crisis, the banking crisis, two wars we had going on. Like, those were the priorities. And so maybe states said, OK, well, since there are other priorities and the president has not said explicitly that he's going to go after states to legalize weed, let's take this opportunity to do so. Or they just didn't respect him at all, didn't respect the federal rule of law under a black president. I'm not sure which one it is. We have got a particular set of issues that we're very concerned about in Wisconsin and specifically in Milwaukee, and we talk about them pretty much every day. If you take just one of those issues, reckless driving, which is something that we can discuss 3 hours a day, 5 days a week because of how many people it has impacted. If we were in the state of Wisconsin to move in the direction of legalizing marijuana, whether it be medicinal or recreational, one thing is for sure, you will increase the supply of marijuana available in the state. And actually, the marijuana that people buy on the street is actually going to increase in sales because dispensary marijuana is incredibly expensive. Do we want to increase the supply of potentially extremely potent marijuana in Wisconsin and in the city of Milwaukee while we are still dealing with a reckless driving epidemic? I don't know if that would make things better. We'll discuss more on another radio program. Have a great day. I'll see you next time.